So we are excited to be able to present this panel, but we've lost two of our panelists, but we have their presentations. So my name is Marge Cohen, and I'm going to give an introduction to our panel. And I forgot the order. And then we have Mary Fabry, who will be able to present her discussion of gender-based violence in Ethiopia, the ART adherence in youth in Rwanda, who was going to be presented by Emily Seedlick, but she is unable to attend, and I will share with you that program. And then Kathleen Weber will present both of the U.S. presentations related to WISE data on women and violence. Okay? So, to begin, yes.
Can I make an announcement?
Sure.
Start?
Of course.
Caucus. Hi, I'm Dr. John Ross. I'm a co-chair of the Socialist Caucus, and we're going to pass around the sign-up sheet. If you're not on our email list, we think we do the most edgy and politically savvy presentations at APHA every year. And if you like the stuff that we present, please sign up for email. We promise we will not email you more than twice a year. We'll send you the artists, our program list, and I think there's copies of our program list, or you can just make it simple this year. They put all of our programs in this room. If you don't know what to do later in the day or all the way through to Tuesday evening, just come back here because something good's going to be happening. So
now you definitely know, right?
So it's real simple with us. So we encourage you just to give us your name and your email at the very least, or if you go snail mail only, put your snail mail on here. And we promise we're not going to bombard you with emails. We're going to send you pertinent information. So the next year, if you come back, you can find these good programs. And thanks. I'm going to pass this along.
Okay, so my name is Marge Cohen, and I am a physician who's been working with women with HIV for several decades, and I also work in Rwanda with women with HIV. So we have been doing presentations at APHA about violence in women both globally and nationally, and we thought we'd sort of expand our session or sort of synthesize all that in this session and think of issues related to youth, women, our country, as well as globally. And in thinking about this, you know, it's obviously a very current and contentious issue for some people in our country. This, of course, was the comment that was made earlier this summer, but just last week, it just kept on as the, you know, continued work relates to the Republican Party trying to limit and sort of remove all the gains that women have made in terms of reproductive rights. So it's still obviously a very significant issue that we have to attend to. Violence against women is defined as any act of gender-based violence that results in or is likely to result in physical, sexual, or mental harm, suffering to women, including threats of such acts as coercion, arbitrary deprivation of liberty, whether occurring in the public or in the private sphere. The UN and WHO has actually studied this in their multi-country study, and you can see that the rates are far to the right, about 15%, the high in Ethiopia at 71% of lifetime prevalence of violence among women who are currently partnered. So I would suggest just for the next 10 minutes that we think about gender-based violence in the context of gender roles. And I think the following presentations will sort of hopefully make that make sense, more sense. So gender roles are society's ideas about the rights, duties, responsibilities, behaviors, and status of women and men in relationship to each other. I mean, that's like WHO's definition. And clearly, women are disproportionately harmed by these gender roles or these gender norms. Greater access to resources and power and influence are given to men, therefore creating and perpetuating inequities between women and men. This is a pretty complicated, but I think important model of of gender roles and gender inequity and gender-based violence that Jukes has done, usually thinking of HIV in the global sense, okay? So if you start over here, can you see where I am? I can, yeah? Well, anyway, the gender and relationship power inequity bubble, right? Are you there? So clearly that directly can relate to rape as a direct transmission, as the gender roles put women in a position where they might more likely to be raped, to have violence, to experience childhood sexual abuse. And clearly this situation can cause does cause psychological distress, post-traumatic stress, depression, which we'll hear more about in the other talks. And that distress also can continue and increase the gender inequity in power relationships. But in addition, when that psychological distress is present, there's a likelihood that there'll be more risky sex because women might be in the position to only have need to have transactional sex, or they might use drugs to deal with their distress and be disinhibited, or get in relationship with partners that put them more at risk for HIV. And then similarly, men and women will sort of act to their gender norms, and men will have more sexual risk-taking, more likely to be HIV infected if they stick with those norms, and women will have sort of more acquiescence and less likely to demand use of condoms. So you have a sort of this kind of perfect storm, I think, to produce a greater likelihood of having HIV. So I think my point here, and I think this will be stressed in the other presentations also, is that there's gender-based violence, but there's gender roles and gender inequities that are producing this gender-based violence that have to be addressed if we're actually going to get a reduction in gender-based violence. So we see that the relationship between gender inequity and these high-risk behaviors are significant. This is an international study from Botswana and Swaziland, which showed that when men and women had male-controlled sexual decision-making, rape was much more likely to occur by the men, unprotected sex, and multiple current sexual partners for the men, and a high percentage of more likelihood of intergenerational sex, with women having sex with men 10 years older than them. Similarly, a study we did in Kigali looked at young women, so youth, and the women had been forced to have sex in a significant percentage. Again, intergenerational sex high, with 75% having their first encounter with a male 5 years older, and a third or 40% with a man 10 years older than them. And these are among 17-year-old young women. And then finally, being forced to exchange sex, either for money, clothes, things. Again, emphasizing how those roles put someone at risk for gender-based violence and actually HIV. It's not always HIV that the gender-based violence is significant for. Reproductive coercion is something that has been looked at. This is from a Northern California study, actually, where women going to a prenatal clinic reported 53% reported physical and sexual partner abuse, 19% said they experienced pregnancy coercion, and control sabotage, which, again, I think is a way gender inequities get manifested in terms of health issues. And one-third of the respondents reported partner violence, also reporting to reproductive control. So our work has shown that domestic violence and childhood sexual abuse is very prevalent in women with HIV. Here you can see that 67% of women with HIV had a lifetime prevalence, and that this violence related their child, if they had child sexual abuse, which 30% of the women reported, they were likely to use drugs, have lifetime male, higher number of lifetime male partners, and have transactional sex. So there's this continuum that we're concerned about that we keep noting in the literature. In our study, in terms of women with HIV, we saw that women were not taking the medicines they should. HART is a medication for HIV, a combination. So non-use, not taking the medicines you should be taking at the point in your disease, was associated with current drug use, as well as a history of physical or sexual abuse. So women who'd had that in their lives were less likely to take the medicines they should. So it continues on as a approach that prevents you from doing well in whatever disease you have. And others have found that recent trauma is associated with a 4 times likelihood of not having viral suppression and doing poorly on antiretroviral therapy. And finally, sadly, we've recently discovered that mortality is associated with recent abuse, with women in the WISE study that you'll hear more about having a 1.5 to 2 times likelihood of dying if they'd experienced abuse in the last year. So what our panel is today is we have to do something about this instead of having thousands of talks where we say how terrible the issues of violence are. And we're a pretty optimistic group up here. So we think that things absolutely can change. The folks who UNAIDS that is doing and WHO, which is doing a global plan to eliminate HIV infections among children, say that gender must be the fundamental consideration in any country plans, and suggest that if there aren't gender transformation, transformative programs, then we won't eliminate vertical transmission of HIV. So its impact is really very, very strong, and I think we have potential, if we understand it and act appropriately, to make big differences. There have been programs where men have been targeted to reduce gender-based violence, and there's several randomized controlled trials. These are 3 I picked, 1 in South Africa, Brazil, and in Malawi, and basically efforts were made to discuss with men what their attitudes and actions were doing, and after several sessions, negative attitudes were decreased, violence was decreased, increased talking with partners about safer sex measures was done. There was a more equitable gender beliefs were reported by the participants, more testing for HIV, more condom use, better communication. The Northern California Clinic also looked at increased talking to women who were coming in who had experienced violence, how they could better negotiate their reproductive health. So it wasn't always a discussion of, after assuming that the woman or finding out if the woman was safe, it wasn't always a discussion of removal. It was a discussion of how to actually engage some of these issues so that there would be more control for her of her pregnancy and reproductive health, birth control use, thinking about what contraception she could use that she could control. And that resulted in a 71% reduction in the odds of pregnancy coercion. There's 2 South Africa projects that have also shown in randomized controlled trial that the women and girls, in terms of like several sessions over about 2 to 3 months, decreased violence, more positive communication, more autonomy in decision making, and another with women and men, decreased risk factors for HIV, significant declines in violence against women among the men who were participating. So I think it's important to figure out what interventions are important for us to consider and to use. So my thoughts before we get onto the meat of the panel is that I think we should consider training counselors to discuss gender inequity, inequality in relationships more broadly than has your partner emotionally, physically, or sexually abused you or hurt you in the last 2 weeks. We want to really get at, I think, something that will enable a conversation that will improve the situation. Since our sexual practices and behaviors flow from gender identities and inequities, it's very tied up, and if we don't address it, I think we won't actually make a big difference. We have to align HIV, specifically prevention and treatment, with gender inequity to reduce HIV transmission, disease progression, and deaths. And if we develop more gender equitable strategies and interventions, we probably will improve people coming in for HIV testing, treatment access, and viral suppression. And finally, in our experience, I think for everyone here, we have seen enormous amount of power and potential when women and men have actually made these changes and considered these approaches. And that's the most important thing, and I think that's what motivates us to continue this work, to make sure that women and men have healthy lives and domestic violence is no longer acceptable.